You are listening to a sermon by Carl Brown, recorded on Sunday, December 11th, 2022, at Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thank you, Rosie. And thank you, everyone. It's a privilege to speak to you. Amongst our congregation, there are many who actually have an education in religious matters. In contrast, I have a small certificate from the Bishop of St. Boniface in Winnipeg. It congratulates me on my excellent mark for religious study. I earned that certificate when I was in grade 4. Today we light the shepherd's candle, symbolizing joy. The candle is pink, and in the Catholic tradition, I am dressed in pink as well. Sorry, rose. Yes, anyways, I'll be speaking about joy and happiness. Now, some of my research comes from the Book of Joy, which contains dialogues between Bishop Desmond Tutu and His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So today you've got a Canadian Métis speaking to a Mennonite congregation about discussions between a Buddhist monk and an Anglican bishop. And it's all presented by an ex-Roman Catholic. So that should check a few of our diversity boxes. Today is Fourth Advent, known as Gaudete Sunday, the Day of Joy. And here I actually have somebody singing what you would hear in a Catholic church if you were there today, because the priest would sing it. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, I had a complete computer crash. So fair warning, I'm going to sing it. Evan, you can plug your ears now. Gaudete in Domino semper. Janice, you can tell Evan to take his fingers out. Gaudete in Domino semper. Rejoice in the Lord always, from Philippians 4:4. Last year, I spoke about joy, how it's part of our makeup, how it determines our view of the world, and how this level of joy within ourselves may go up or down depending upon circumstances, but always seems to return eventually to our own personal level. What am I going to talk about today? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Love thy neighbor as thyself. These are holy commands, and they incorporate all that is good about Christianity. Unfortunately, we have to scrabble about for the knowledge as to how, with our weak spirits, we can find the strength to fulfill these commands, and that's what I will talk about. How do we find the ability to fulfill those commands? Now, this is Third Advent, which heralds a week of joy, happiness that the Savior is imminent. And today, we are going to look at happiness. And what's that got to do with those holy commands? Well, first, let's look at three terms: joy, pleasure, and happiness. Defining joy, we just reviewed that. It's our baseline, the level of internal joy through which we view the world. Joy is a resource that we carry with us. Psychologists do refer to this as our set point of happiness. Moving on to pleasure. Pleasure is by nature unstable, fleeting, and dependent upon circumstances. The feeling that pleasure creates soon becomes neutral, and we then require stronger and new sources of pleasure. And we all know what pleasure is. The feeling we get from a good cup of coffee, from a hug, a new coat, a hit of cocaine. Life is full of pleasures. Caution, though. People often confuse pleasure with happiness. And there are quite a few pleasures that, while they give you pleasure, will actually ruin the happiness in your life. That new coat will give you pleasure, and it will keep you healthy, thereby enhancing your happiness. That hit of cocaine is known for giving users pleasure. It's also known for ruining their happiness. It's a pleasure, but it does not lead to happiness. The point worth remembering. Psychologists have a term for this. It's called the pleasure paradox. It refers to the practical difficulties encountered in the pursuit of pleasure. For the hedonist, constant pleasure seeking may not yield the most actual pleasure or happiness in the long term. So, pleasure, constantly and consciously seeking happiness, interferes with experience of happiness. So, defining happiness now. What is it really? Well, just like joy, everyone has a vague idea of what it is, but really it's kind of hard to explain its concise definition. Is it like pleasure? What's the difference between pleasure and happiness? The scientific and psychological communities have very concrete definitions of both, right down to the different neurotransmitters that pleasure and happiness each use. And I'm not getting into that stuff. You and I both know how happiness feels, and that's what we're looking at here. So my 3 points today are: 1, why be happy? 2, how to be happy? And 3, does God want us? So 1, why be happy? Because it is when we ourselves are happy that we naturally fall into the correct frame of mind to make others happy. This seems like common sense and is now actually a scientifically proven fact. So 2, how to be happy? I'm going to spend a little more time here. How to be happy. Happiness favors the prepared mind. What we have to first of all do is adjust our perspective. Louis Pasteur's quote, "Chance favors the prepared mind," means that the more knowledgeable you are, the more you'll be able to take advantage of any opportunities provided by chance. And in the same way, life gives us opportunities to be happy, but we can only turn them into happiness if we are prepared, if we have the right perspective. And here's a direction for our own perspective. From Galatians 5. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. Archbishop Desmond Tutu believes that generosity and compassion are most pivotal to any lasting happiness. Would you like to see my smiley face? It's a fellow named Harvey Ball. He created the smiley face in 10 minutes. The State Mutual Life Assurance Company in Worcester, Massachusetts. You can ask Rosie for the correct pronunciation for that. Hired him to make a symbol to help raise employee morale. Now, Mr. Ball was a formally educated artist and trained sign painter, and for his 10 minutes of work in 1963, he was paid $45. Neither Ball nor the insurance company took out a trademark, and within a few years, you'll probably remember this, tens of millions of smiley face buttons, coffee cups, and t-shirts were splashed across the world. And Mr. Ball didn't make a penny out of it. In 1999, Ball created the World Smile Corporation to license one version of the image. And he spent all of the income from that corporation improving the lives of children. Importantly, Mr. Ball wasn't sorry that he did not become rich from his super successful smiley face. He was a guy who wasn't driven by money. And one of his favorite sayings was, "Hey, I can only eat one steak at a time, drive one car at a time." Mr. Ball's perspective was that once you've satisfied your life's needs, more money won't make your life any happier. Therefore, he could afford to be generous. So, how to be happy? Well, focusing on ourselves. There's no end of self-help books and articles that want to help you find happiness. To increase our happiness, we could search for healthy pleasures. We could focus more on our lifestyle, better foods, visit interesting places, increase the money we spend. I've even come across an article that tells me exactly how to spend money to make myself happy. I love the title. If money doesn't make you happy, then you probably aren't spending it right. And it goes on to tell you how to spend your money and make yourself happiness. The tragedy here is that following all this advice would only make us sadder. Yep. It's one of those things where focusing on the goal and running towards it as hard as you can is the worst way to pursue the goal. Focusing on oneself, hedonism, is a guaranteed method for keeping happiness out of your life. You've even got a name for it now. It's called the pleasure paradox, wherein consciously pursuing happiness interferes with finding it. And when it comes to riches, money, through my work in China, I've personally met with dozens of multimillionaires and billionaires. And in my experience, most wealthy people are never happy with their income. They always want just a little more. And in light of that statement, I hope you can enjoy the irony of the following statistical discovery. Increasing income will increase happiness, but only up to a point, that is, past the poverty level. Adding more money after that doesn't increase your happiness much. So it seems that money doesn't buy happiness, unless, as we find out next, it's given to others. So let's leave making ourselves happy by focusing on ourselves and proceed to focusing on others. And as I said before, Archbishop Desmond Tutu believes that generosity and compassion are the most pivotal to our personal lasting happiness. And he's not alone. The Dalai Lama agrees that meditating upon compassion is the most effective method to gain our own happiness. And now modern science is getting into the act. Promoting compassion as the key to happiness used to be the sole domain of religion. But in recent years, that's changed. Cultivating compassion for others is now considered by science as one of the most effective methods of finding your own happiness. I don't know if you've read anything about this. Matthew Ricard, he's a Tibetan monk and a French geneticist, and he became known as the happiest man alive. University of Wisconsin neuroscientists stuck 256 sensors onto his skull and scanned his brain during meditation. And they were shocked to find the highest capacity for happiness ever recorded. They measured a level of gamma waves from him that was simply off the charts, coupled with shockingly high left prefrontal cortex activity. Translating that into English, it meant that he had a reduced propensity towards negativity and an abnormally large capacity for happiness. Now, I think the question here is, what was he meditating on? Well, he was meditating upon the same thing that he's meditated on for over 20 years, and that is, you probably guessed it, compassion. Monsieur Ricard puts it quite simply. His quote is, "So compassion and loving kindness are related to well-being. You know, if you are altruistic, you are more likely to be happy. that is, than if you are selfish. Now, I have his book, title is Happiness, A Guide to Developing Life's Most Important Skill. And it's a delightful read full of illustrative prose. It's about compassion. It expands our ability to be happy, and this is now a fact. Popular psychology even has a term for this. It's called the helper's high. Self-explanatory term for the joy we receive after helping someone. Now, compassion is a form of love that's too powerful to be negated by rejection. We usually think of love as being together with someone else, but compassionate love may be experienced for someone to whom love is not reciprocated. It's not dependent upon reciprocation. This makes compassion stable and less susceptible to negative influences. Jesus, Buddhism, clinical psychology, modern neurology, are they all saying the same thing? Amazingly, yes. Cultivating compassion for others is a guaranteed method of finding your own happiness. Last point, does God want us to be happy? Well, if you've listened to a lot of fire and brimstone sermons in the past, you might wonder if Christians are really allowed to be happy. Does God want us to be happy? Absolutely. Without restraint, holding back nothing, I have no doubt that God wants us to be happy. I believe without reservation that, in fact, God made us to be happy. And I'm convinced of this by two simple, provable, and now scientifically respected facts. We are naturally compassionate. Compassion makes us happy. Using the power of compassion, which strengthens happiness, we can increase the happiness of others. So here's my summation. Look at the commands for compassion from our Bible readings today. Isaiah 35. Strengthen the weak hands and make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are of a fearful heart, be strong, do not fear. Here is your God. He will come and save you. Jesus himself leads us into compassion. He uses the event of his compassion as the evidence to prove that he is the Messiah. From Matthew 11, when John heard in prison that what the Messiah was doing, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another? And Jesus answered them, go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight. The lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have the good news brought to them. And remember that we Christians are commanded to be happy. Today's Psalm 146. Happy are those whose help is the God of Jacob, whose hope is in the Lord their God, who made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, who keeps faith forever, who executes justice for the oppressed, who gives food to the hungry. The Lord sets the prisoners free. The Lord opens the eyes of the blind. The Lord lifts up those who are bowed down. The Lord loves the righteous. And so, to be happy, we need to make others happy. And for this, we must prepare our minds. We must be happy ourselves so that we can focus on compassion for others. Today, Third Advent begins a week of anticipation. This week reminds us that the Lord came and he is coming once again. We await his return. Let us spend this time developing compassion. Let us await him with joy unto happiness. May God bless you all.